Hi, welcome to the session on delivering user virtualization and why you should care. I'm Michael Cleef from AppSense, and with me today I've got two of the other guys from AppSense, Brian Kelly, who's sitting down the front, and John Wallace, who's just sitting over there. They're going to come share some stage time with me. You know, this is kind of a surreal feeling being here, because last year I was working for Microsoft and keynoting MMS, and here I am now working for a partner at a Microsoft conference, so it is a bit of a surreal feeling. But today I'm going to talk to you about what user virtualization is and what it isn't, and what sort of value that it can offer you as the customer in how you approach desktop virtualization. So today's topic, first I'm going to debunk a couple of myths that people pigeonhole, certainly AppSense as, and other vendors in the market, as in terms of the capability of what user virtualization is. We're going to talk about user virtualization in fairly simple terms and the components that we believe comprise user virtualization, because it's certainly not just profile management. We're going to talk about user virtualization within your current System Center Microsoft environment, and also where we're going with System Center 2012, based on some announcements that we made yesterday, the day before, around our System Center investments. And we'll talk about managing the continuous change as you go move forward, and we're going to show a little bit about Windows 8 and what we're doing in Windows 8. And then finally, John's going to come up and talk about DataNow, which is our exciting new investment in basically data anywhere, on any device, any platform. So he'll come talk a little bit about that just at the end. So along the way, we're going to have a lot of demos. I mean, this is going to be a very demo-centric session. So we're going to have a lot of demos that convey all of these concepts and basically some of the things you should be thinking about, especially as you're going to deploy stuff like VDI. So how many of you actually have like VDI technologies or something like XenApp presentation technology? So many of you are kind of in this vein of being challenged with how do you make sure you have that consistent experience across your whole platform. We're going to show you how you can go and achieve that today. So in terms of those myths, there is this perception that AppSense is purely a profile virtualization vendor. The reality is, though, we've actually come from a background, like over 10 years, initially starting around performance management. And for those of you who are Citrix administrators, you may have known about us from our performance management technology that we had quite some time ago. And then we started to invest in application management, that is user rights management, security, whitelisting, blacklisting. And then the last thing we've been really working on is personalization and policy associated with that. But I guess the shiny new thing and the cool thing we like to demo is the personalization side, so we tend to talk about that a lot. But really, user virtualization isn't just profile management. It's the overall experiences that the user expects to have on any platform. As you move from Windows XP to Windows 7, the things that frustrate the users the most are when they have to do these trivial little tasks, recreating their personal settings over and over again. The last thing that they really want is to lose that precious auto-signature that they have in Outlook. It's just the little things that they call the help desk for that really you wear cost for as you go and do those deployments. And we can help you be selective during your migration to help you go do that. The other myth is that this really only applies to virtual desktops, that is, VDI or session-based approaches to virtualization. The reality is even Microsoft will talk about desktop virtualization is really for physical PCs as well as virtual. That is, when we think of what new ways of deploying the desktop, we can still absolutely have a physical PC and layer technologies on top of that to give us the ability to compose the desktop in a very different way. The other myth is that the need for user virtualization will actually decrease as new OS platforms, technologies emerge because there'll be some funky new trend. Fundamentally, there's a shift in market right now of, and you saw it in Brad's System Center keynote, of moving away from a device-centric mentality towards a user-centric mentality. You're probably dealing with a plethora of devices coming to your organization. How do you support them? And really, in many instances, it's not just how you support the device. How do you support the user experiences so that they can get everything they need on their iPad, their iPhone, their Android tablet, their Windows phone, their Windows tablet, like all these different devices that users ultimately are starting to choose what they want to use rather than just accepting the corporate mandated stuff. So we think the need for user virtualization will actually increase. In fact, we think it will explode because more and more people are bringing more and more devices into the organization, certainly not less. So you've probably seen diagrams like this before, this concept of layering. Even when I was at Microsoft as the VDI product manager, I was a big proponent of this kind of architecture. When you think of VDI and composing in a pooled scenario, you're essentially forced into this kind of layered approach. The last thing you want is to bake everything into that pooled image, because then when you've got to go service it, it gets really painful, really expensive. It's much better to not have to visit that image as much as possible and just stream what you want straight into those images in application layers. And of course, as you go and compose the desktop for the user, to add the user information in, the policies in, make it really fast so that you don't have all these scripts executing at logon. You end up having all the scripts and policies and actions and contexts happening as it's required. For example, you may have finance users, you may have check printers. Those check printers that roll out checks one after the other are all sequenced. The last thing you want is printers being mapped at the start of the session, the user accidentally hitting print on the check printer, and they print their document right over the checks. Wouldn't it be better to be contextually sensitive and say, okay, now I'm starting that application that utilizes the check printer, now map the check printer into that, so that's now default, and I can now use that appropriately. What that does is it gives us the point in time context to apply policy, actions, mappings at that point in time rather than at the start. Many users' experiences that they have when they first go and use a new desktop deployment is, how fast does this thing log on? If it's nice and snappy, generally their first experience is, wow, this is a lot faster. It's not necessarily a lot faster in operation, it's certainly a lot faster for them to get working and get productive. So this layering approach really makes a lot of sense, moving away from monolithic managed desktops in towards more of a layered approach towards desktop virtualization. So this is really where we see user virtualization. You can see we see the personalization aspect, that is what you would think of, you know, previously as profile management, as one component of the overall puzzle of user virtualization. To think of the rights that the user needs in order to work. Think in some cases, you want to be giving them more rights to be able to do some more operations on Windows 7 than user account control will let you do. User account control is very binary. It's either you have it all or you have not a heck of a lot. Wouldn't it be better if you gave them the granular capability to add the printer that they need that Windows 7 won't let you go do? So the rights and the context for your particular users is again something we see as part of what user virtualization delivers. Now the new thing that we just actually announced on Tuesday is an investment in data. Now we've previously talked a little bit about data a few months ago, where we basically provided a free application. You can go to, if you're on an iPhone or if you've got an iPad, you can go to the App Store, download a free application called Data Locker. And what Data Locker does is it encrypts your Dropbox data. It's free. You just simply go up to your Dropbox, you connect Data Locker to it, bang, now I can encrypt all my data into Dropbox, nice and secure. I can put it on my Mac, my Windows machine, or my iPhone, iPad, and all my Dropbox data that moves around can now be totally encrypted with AES 256-bit encryption. So really good story there. That was our first little foray into data. What we just announced on Tuesday is essentially, think of the concept of Dropbox for the enterprise. That is your data being now exposed, like think of your home drives, your file shares, your SharePoint sites. Think of that now being able to be exposed to different devices, your iPad, your iPhone, your Android devices, your Windows devices. Imagine now I've got policy, governance, and data across all of my stuff, and I don't have to move my stuff. That's really where we're very different with some of the other offerings in market. They really require you to take stuff out of there, where it is today, where you're really happy to manage it, and put it in their stuff. Our approach is, why move it? Leave it where it is, we'll point to it, and we'll broker that access to any type of device. So that's becoming a very, very important aspect for the user, because they're starting to use more and more native applications on different devices. Why not just give you the data that you need to use those native applications? So you can use Word 2010 over here, you can use another application over there that can open a .docx format, Wouldn't it be great if I could just use that? And so that's really what we're about, is enabling. So in terms of, you know, UV in your environment today, we're starting to see this concept of personalization becoming the table stakes. A lot of vendors have it. You've probably seen Microsoft's recent investments in UEV, or user experience virtualization. Now, surprisingly, we were very happy to hear that Microsoft was going to release an investment in this area, because it's really starting to validate what we've said all along, that managing the user and their information is very, very important. The last thing you want to be using is these rather clumsy approaches to moving users from machine to machine, such as USMT, which basically, okay, user, stop working, because I have to move you from that machine to that machine, so just stop. I'm now going to suck it all out and push it all back in. And USMT is rather clumsy in its approach, very batch-oriented. Despite the free tool, it's actually very expensive in terms of labor. Wouldn't it be better if you didn't have that approach at all? So this table stakes of, wouldn't it be great if I could get the settings here in real time, move them over there in real time, that's really what we do. I guess the difference when I compare the architectures, we'll talk about this a little bit more in the demo, when I look at the architectures, UEV is a great, simple, and versatile solution, but fundamentally, you probably as enterprises want more than that. You want centralized management. You want to enable scenarios such as desktop as a service, where you have some on-premise desktops and physical PCs, but you may want to have some stuff off-site at a data center. How do you manage the replication of that information between your physical environment in terms of your, you know, where you are in your building versus, you know, your information sitting at the data center? Well, we have a back-end server that does that, and it's using SQL Server to help replicate that information. In fact, you could be replicating that information all over the world if you want to, in very, you know, geographically separated data centers. We can manage all that. So from an enterprise level, even just this concept of personalization, we manage that very effectively in a multi-data center approach. So there are some differences, obviously, with UEV to us in terms of architecture, but we're a very centralized server-based architecture for some obvious reasons that you'll see very shortly in terms of some of our system center investments. So with that, I thought I might show you a little bit about certainly what we do today in terms of that back-end service and client. So what I've got here is a XenApp environment that's actually cloud hosted. So I'm just going to go log onto it. I've got one of the VMs up at the moment, but what I'm going to go do is log onto the other ones. So this is Zen Desktop 5. So we actually work a lot with Citrix as well in terms of you know, our go-to-markets and working together in solutions. In fact, we've just released a white paper that you'll see here. You can go get this for free from AppSense.com. It's called Why AppSense for VDI. Basically where we've tested our whole solution stack on Zen Desktop 5.6, the latest, and we did a huge performance test to make sure that, firstly, we could scale. Secondly, we can actually offer a reduced cost per user. In VDI, it's very expensive, and that initial CapEx investment, we can actually offer, you know, potentially 10% or more density than you would normally get, because we can actually manage performance quite effectively. So you can go to appsense.com/blog, and you'll see this announcement around why AppSense for VDI. But to convey it visually, you know, I've got a Windows XP machine here, and I'm going to go fire up a Windows 7 machine in Zen Desktop as well. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to sort of simulate this concept of I'm logging onto my Windows XP machine and seamlessly moving settings over to Windows 7. So there's my Windows 7 machine. First thing you'll notice, the backgrounds are consistent. That all works. First thing I'm going to go do is go into Excel. And you can see it's black. If I go to the Windows 7 machine, well, it's going to be black too. Pop it, it's black. In fact, that was a native application, right? So that when I say native, I mean it was installed physically. The binaries live on the machine. It talks to the real registry. We've also got on the same machine the AppV version of Excel. Now, for those of you who understand how AppV actually works, AppV is streaming stuff into the virtual machine in a bubble. Everything's in the bubble, the binaries and its own little virtual registry. Now, for those of you who are considering moving to AppV applications, which is a great thing, how do you move the personalization that users have on XP into the AppV bubble backwards and forwards, because sometimes you may want to deploy Office natively, sometimes you may want to do it virtually. We can do that. We actually have a very low-level driver that intercepts the changes as they're made through the registry and squirts them into the right spot, whether it's the AppV bubble or whether it's native. Now, some of our competitors, you know, like to show that same demo, but the only way that they can actually do that is by violating the AppV bubble to talk to the real registry. So that kind of violates the idea of AppV straight up. So hang on, let's go over to Windows XP, and in real time, we're going to go switch the color from black to silver, close it. Now, we're just intercepting that change as we close the app. It's an event. We're going to intercept that change, talk to the web services on the back-end server, write the change to the SQL server, and now I can actually go straight over to my Windows 7 machine, pop that same version of Excel that I was running before, the AppV version of Excel, stream, it's done. And I can go backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards. So you can see this concept of real-time personalization. Where's migration fit here now in terms of migrating what I would have had to do with USMT? I now don't have to use USMT. I don't have to have the batch approach. The user can literally, you can literally airdrop a machine while the user goes to lunch. Bang, done. They log on. All their stuff's there. Everything's there. Their signatures are there. Everything that you want is there. And that's really the main thing. Now, how does that work on the back end? Well, so here's that back end of that same Zen desktop service. So you can see here I've got a few different personalization groups. I've got some application groups of things that I want to go manage. And so if I go and right-click on them and go personalization analysis, this is the power of having a backend. I can actually do some very intelligent things and understand what the users are doing, and I can manage applications centrally. I don't have to create templates and push them to clients. I can simply go to the server side and go, okay, I want to just simply manage that application. So here's my personalization analysis for me. Here's me logged on, michael.cleef, and here's the applications I've been using. And in real time, I can simply edit the application registry in real time so the next time user launches the app, bang, that's what they're going to go get, right? So there are applications that I'm essentially whitelisting and saying, yes, I'm going to go support them. So I can be very granular. I don't have to pull all the crap over from XP. I can just pull all the stuff that I want to actually bring over. But I can also go discover everything that they're running, any executable that they go run, scripts they run. I can see all of that information. And importantly, I can go roll back. So you can see I can actually transact over a period of time. And I can select how many of these I want. I can say 10, 20, however. You've obviously got to have enough SQL Server, you know, database to be able to support that. But the good story here is I can roll back incrementally. That's another little difference from us and UEV. UEV writes the latest change and the original when the app first starts. So there's two different differentials. There's when you first started the app, it writes a nice change to the XML. And then after that, it writes every incremental change over the last one. So if I want to go roll back in a support scenario, I can do it. So the good thing is UEV can do it, but it can only go back to the first settings that I first started the application with. Now, in some cases, users don't really want that to happen. So all I have to do here is go roll back to this archive, bang, successfully roll back. Next time I launch that application, waiting for XP. Next time I launch the application, it should be back to black, basically, right? Now, so the interesting thing here is there you go, back to black. So really dynamic from a support scenario, fantastic. Now, so that's from a support side. Like the user calls the help desk and says, hey, I need my application settings rolled back because I screwed something up. I have no idea what I did. I need to roll back. What we're going to talk about in a second is our system center investments, how you can do this in an automated fashion using self-service. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring Brian up now to have just a quick discussion on our user rights management capabilities because he's a bit more of a gunner on user rights management than I am. And so our user rights management capabilities in our technology really allows you to optimize your environment and granularly whitelist and blacklist the things that you do and don't want to have on the machine. So over to you, Brian.
Thank you. Can you switch me? Does that sound all right? Hi, everybody. So just as you said, in the same type of context, we're looking at user virtualization as the whole user, and part of that is going to be rights. But also we mentioned optimization, and one of the concepts of that is going to be the optimization of your base images and your base applications and making sure that the user can take the benefits of what we want them to offer, but we don't want them messing that up either at the same time. What I am going to do first is take you a little bit into the weeds for a second, just take you to the back end and then show you what it might look like for an end user. So we do have a policy. And we have policies for rights management, which allows us to designate certain individuals to be elevated for specific applications or specific components. So here I have a policy that says, make them an admin. Okay? Then we're going to come down here and specify what type of, when will we make them an admin. So we have a couple of ways of doing that, and one is just a particular application. So in your environments, one single application that requires admin rights, they're now an administrator of the whole machine. Right? They can do anything. They can install software. They can change components in your settings. Right? So what we'd like to do is just expose that one process. Right? You launch Visual Studio, that the admin in that process, you close it, that's gone. Right? It all stays in the user's context as well. We never change who the user is. So all auditing that might be applied are still done as Brian, even though I might have been elevated at that time. Right? Also, what we can do is by component, we actually expose everything in control panel and computer management. So I came from Boston, and we're 3 hours difference. So I had a few meetings scheduled this week. It'd be nice if I could change my time. But you need to be an administrator to do that. So I can give you that granularity by going down and choosing the components, again, based on what group you're in and what type of machines you're on. We're also going to have web installations. Again, I'm traveling. We use GoToMeeting, right? We talk to our Microsoft counterparts, and that meeting's often going to be on a live meeting. Right? So have I downloaded that on a particular machine that I'm on? Do I need to re-download that? So we can actually designate an entire website. Anything from Microsoft is okay. Anything from Adobe.com is okay. Or I could get granular down to the actual component and what controls those are. And then lastly, one of the other options we have is self-elevation, where I can actually go through and choose for designated power users that they could elevate themselves when they need it, but then have an audit trail to do that. And one other thing we do, too, to protect that base system is by taking away their admin rights and just giving them what we want, they can't change that system too much. Another thing that we do, sorry, I'm going to scroll a bit, is something called trusted ownership. And what we're trying to do here is actually protect what can be executed on that machine. And so by this concept, we look at the NTFS ownership of a file. And if it's in our trusted set, you know, system administrator, your SSCM installer account, then that's trusted. We know that's at least starting from a good state. Anything else is not allowed to run unless we do some other exception to allow that. So in this way, again, we can protect it, but allow them to install things if we want them to. So just to show how that might look coming from my client. So first, web page. So users, they surf the web. Right? They might see things that are harmless, but they want to launch them. So here are our little puppies. You know, I just want to see a picture. I run. What's happening is this download, it's being downloaded as me. I am logged in as a user. But because it's going to be owned by me, we're just not going to allow it to run. We can do whitelisting and blacklisting, but what we don't know is what's worse. Right? We don't know what's coming out there. So this way, anything that wasn't pre-approved doesn't get to run.
So that could essentially block malware, yeah?
The other components we were mentioning, too, about elevation, say ActiveX I mentioned from a website. So just going to show you, I could specify it by a component or a particular website. You know, so again, just to show that I'm not an administrator, I am going to get listed here and prompted for my elevated credentials, which will fail pretty soon. And just while I'm doing that, I'm going to do one other thing. Also, just to show that I'm not an administrator, just trying to open up the computer management, that also prompts me user credentials. But I mentioned earlier, I'm traveling. I might want to change the time as I go. I can, in a granular sense, now go and adjust the time. No even UAC prompt. So we're elevating for those particular tasks, no UAC for the user, great experience, but again, they can't damage the other settings that we don't want them to get into. And then if I go to a site that has been approved,
Oops, I did the wrong one, sorry. Sorry about that, one sec. Dancing. Sorry, babe. There we go. And then, sorry, I'll click correctly this time. Now I have the ActiveX allow. Again, I just specified a website. We could even create an app store, in a sense. So I wouldn't be able to install software, but we can designate a secure share. By that means the administrators would have write access to the share. Users would have only read access. And then you put any installers. So for those kind of those long tail apps that we don't want to package and pre-deliver, but users are acceptable, you could throw them up there, and they would be elevated and able to install those. Again, but that doesn't affect other parts of that. So this is just going to come up, and I'm not going to go through the process, but that was it.
Yeah. Great.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Brian. Now, the last thing that we tend to do a lot in VDI is manage performance. Now, for those of you who have done any sort of VDI deployment or even ZenApp deployment, you'll know that users can often cause a problem, especially on a shared resource like VDI. That is, I go and start Adobe Flash. Adobe Flash really destroys my density. For those of you who've ever played with that and tried to render locally on your ZenApp server or certainly done any login VSI testing, which I highly recommend as part of your desktop architecture, Flash really whacks it hard. Now, in the test that we did in the Microsoft EC, it was really the basis of that white paper, I was able to use this technology called Performance Manager to actually manage performance quite effectively. Now, think of this simple example. I'm going to go to my machine here. I'm going to run calculator, just good old calculator. Could calculator create a denial of service for all users? Yes, it can. All I have to do is go 99999 factorial. Now, what happens now to the CPU is it's basically spiking to 100%. But what we can do with Performance Manager is as soon as we see any sort of process do things nasty like spiking to 100%, we can clamp that CPU back. We can also do things like putting a hard block. So you saw it was 100 there. We've started to clamp it back so it can't peg the processor. So it still does what it needs to do, but we're stopping it, whacking it hard. Now, in the testing that I did in the EEC, Microsoft EEC, what I did was I sat on top of Adobe Flash with a hard block of 40%, which means I'm stopping it using anything more than 40% per virtual machine. Now, Flash isn't the best written code. You probably get that with the irritating pop-ups that happen every week that they want to do something next to fix the thing. It's not exactly efficient, so you can actually effectively clamp that down to 40% with really no degradation in video loss at all. What I also did was clamped on top of antivirus. Now, you just saw Brian talk about this thing called trusted ownership and how it blocks malware. Now, for this particular customer, they were very, very concerned about the density loss that they could expect around having antivirus in the VM. Depending on the antivirus vendor, you will lose between 15 and 30% of your density simply due to antivirus overhead. Now, what we did in this particular test, we worked with this customer on their risk profile, is we said to the customer, with trusted ownership in here, we're essentially blocking over 90% of the malware because we can block scripts from executing and malicious code coming in from the internet and actually being executed on the virtual machine. So we're able to block that already. Do we really need heuristics switched on then, which is trying to find virus-like activity? Would it be better if we just relied on pattern matching? So what we did is we used some techniques to minimize antivirus. First thing, we used trusted ownership on. We then turned heuristics off. We also then, as we prepared our base image, you know, the Forefront team calls it building the mother of all caches. What it really means is I have to do a full scan on the virtual machine so that the base image and the antivirus scanner knows about everything that's in the image that's golden so that next time you go and execute it, it doesn't need to scan it. It looks at the hash. It goes, yep, it's fine. The integrity of the app, of that particular file has not changed since I originally scanned it. So we're minimizing it there. But with our AppSense performance management technology, we also sat on top of the process and stopped it from peaking and pegging the proc. The resultant effect of all of this is we actually gained 10% overall utilization benefit simply by minimizing flash impact on the hypervisor. So that's, think of it in terms of real dollars. That's 10% more users you get on the system, 10% less hardware you have to spend, however you want to cut it, that makes significant ROI. But importantly, by these techniques of blocking using trusted ownership, as well as managing the processes, we conceded only 3% loss of density due to antivirus, rather than 15 to 30. So it made a very significant difference in terms of VDI performance. So it makes a very, very significant difference in terms of your ROI. And this is all in that white paper that you can download for free and read. And yes, that is actually my car. It's beautiful, I have to tell you. 6.2 liter V8. Whew. It goes. Okay, so in terms of change, we're all thinking about Windows 8 now. What does that mean for the enterprise? Many of you are probably thinking, you know, I'm only going to go from XP to Windows 7, you know, from my corporate desktops, but users will have secondary devices utilizing Windows 8 on tablets and various different types of devices. We're going to be able to support that. We've already started working with Windows 8. We're on the TAP program. And so we actually have plans to make sure we support this out of box. In fact, John over here has already created a little video on YouTube that even shows this working in action. So you can just go up to YouTube and watch this for yourselves, but here's John logging on to Windows 7. So we support Windows 7 today. And in fact, what we can even do is go from XP straight to Windows 8. We don't have to go XP, Windows 7, Windows 8. We can just go jump straight over. So here's John logging onto Windows 8, the developer preview. As you can see, it was, you know, we even were playing with this when the first developer preview came out at the Build conference. Here's John going to Word and doing basically the same demo I just did. He's going to change the color from silver to black. And he's going to change just a few other items in the system there as well. Customize the ribbon, change it around. Importantly, we also save the document information. That is, when you go into Word and you go, you know, file save, there's a recently used list of files that's in the system. So there he is. He's going to go in there. There's the recently used list of documents. Now we're going to go over to Windows 8. There's Word 2010. It's exactly the way he left it on Windows 7. Bang, he goes to the recently used list. There's the test document. Everything is as we expect from Windows 7 to Windows 8. So we are fully supporting that. We expect to be fully supported and you know, from a support perspective at launch. So on Wednesday, we actually announced, or Tuesday afternoon actually, we also announced what we're going to be doing in System Center. So today we already support System Center Configuration Manager today and System Center Operations Manager. But we're going to be investing in System Center Service Manager and also System Center Orchestrator. So we'll have some really fantastic integration. So to show you that, I'm going to pop up a few different VMs. So firstly, there's my System Center Operations Manager console. There's my System Center Configuration Manager console. But here's my System Center Service Manager console. Now, that scenario I used before where I expressed, you know, the user calls the help desk and says, I've just screwed up my machine. Now the help desk can at least go into our console and go, I'm going to roll you back to yesterday. Wouldn't it be better if they didn't even have to call? Wouldn't it be better if they could just go to a portal and go, okay, I want to request self-service for myself. So they go to the service manager portal. You know, you've got all the general things you'd have on the portal, an incident request, a hardware fault. But here's one called rollback application settings. We pop that one up, and we can go to the request form for rollback application settings. So the first thing it asks us is which application. Now, this is a prototype. You could actually add another drop-down that says, you know, I want to roll back not to yesterday, because that was still not so good yesterday. I want to roll back to 3 days ago, a week ago, however often you want them to go back. So in this instance, I can simply go rollback Office 2010, hit Next, hit Submit. Now, what's happening now is as it goes and submits, it's calling System Center Orchestrator to run a runbook. All we're passing into that runbook is two things, the username and the application they want to roll back to. We pass that into System Center Orchestrator, which then calls our API
because we've got an exposed API in our latest versions of AppSense Environment Manager, the personalization server. We call our API to go roll back the user, and the rest is history. You've seen that side of the demo before. So we can see that occur. In a sec, this will switch to pending, and then it'll switch to in progress, and then finally hit completed. So we don't really need to kind of see that all progress through, but you kind of get this idea, well, hang on a sec, I can do this in an automated fashion rather than having the user call at all. So that could really, again, save you money and definitely helps with your support scenarios. Again, another benefit of having a back-end server service to help assist in that rollback process. The next thing I want to show you is our System Center Operations Manager support. So like I mentioned, we do have back-end infrastructure, but it's not just the back-end infrastructure we can support. We can also support the client. So here's one of my virtual machines, Windows 7 Pro. And you can see here, it's got some agents on it. There's the AppSense EM agents. We've got a management pack that can fully support your infrastructure. We can also check the health of the back-end personalization service. You can see that's healthy. From here, I can go drill into different views. So I can drill into, say, that's the agent. I want to go into the personalization server. The state view here, I can highlight this. I can start and stop the service if I want to. So I've got a lot of control from the MOM console to actually control and manage our infrastructure. Now, the last thing I want to show you in System Center is our support through Configuration Manager. So in Configuration Manager 2007, R2, R3, R whatever, we could support System Center certainly from any application that it deployed. So whether it was a natively installed application, a virtual application, or a Zenapp application, we can support that seamlessly and transparently. That was the table stakes, pretty easy sort of stuff. We could also go and do things like, for example, as I drill in here, we could deploy out our agents. So normally what we do to get these agents out is we have a server called AppSense Management Server. Its sole role is to push out an agent to the client and push out configuration items that tell the agent what to do and how to behave. So there is an agent called the CCA, the core communications agent. All it does is communicate with that server and then pulls down any other agent's configuration. So it's some management infrastructure overhead that some customers really don't want to have. So what we can now use is System Center Config Manager to push out those agents. Now, you could say, well, hang on a sec, you could do that before, right? I mean, surely you can do. Yes, you could. Now, the tricky bit, though, was the configurations. Because we have versioned configurations, that is, version 8.1.2, 8.1.3, 8.1.4, as we push out new changes and policies. Now, the issue here is the old version of System Center 2007 couldn't support this concept of versioned packages. System Center 2012, however, can. So what that actually means for you who have System Center is you can now use System Center 2012 to deploy out all of the infrastructure. You can get rid of that one core piece of our management infrastructure and a whole agent off the machine. So it makes certainly a simplification to how you're going ahead and managing that infrastructure. But there's more. Like I alluded to at the start, we're going mobile. We've got a new wave of challenges. You're all facing consumerization of IT. How do you continue to support the user when they're now using an iPad? Citrix has obviously got some great solutions with Receiver and being able to deploy applications to the iPad. But in many instances, customers are now driving for native applications. So sure, we have to present some Windows applications, but do we really have to have every application being published in order to simply use it? It's really more about how do I get the data on that endpoint so that I can consume it. So customers are already finding today, people like you, the users are using stuff like Dropbox in order to be able to move their data around onto different types of devices. That's obviously a very scary thing for enterprise because you really want to control and govern the access to that data. Well, with this new technology we have called DataNow that we released, announced the beta on Tuesday, you can now have a corporate style of Dropbox that you can now finally manage and control access to. Now, to show this, I'm going to bring John Wallace up, who's our Director of Emerging Technologies, to cover a little bit more on what that means.
Thanks, Mike. OK, so what we wanted to do with DataNow, like Michael said, is we wanted to give the functionality of Dropbox to the corporate home folder and home drive. And this is really, really important, a really, really important concept, because you walk around the shows and you speak to various customers, etc., and everyone's talking about Dropbox being a bad thing. We don't want Dropbox in our environment. We don't want Dropbox here. We don't want Dropbox there. And really, when you actually get down to it, Dropbox itself, the fundamentals, the way it works, is actually very, very good. This is the way data should be. It should be easy. It should be accessible. It should be fast. It should be there. It should be on all your devices. So when you actually criticize these types of solutions, you're not necessarily criticizing what the solution is. You're criticizing the way the solution works, i.e. it's cloud hosted. It's not necessarily uber secure in the sense of encryption and everything like that. But let's face it, guys, it really doesn't need to be. Dropbox's focus was fundamentally the consumer. So really, when we took a look at data now and what we wanted to do, we wanted to take the good parts of Dropbox, the good parts of these technologies, and enable them, actually enable them on the corporate home folder. But what we also wanted to do as well is we also wanted to create a solution that didn't require you to change your infrastructure. And this is really, really key. This is a key point of the AppSense Data Now solution. When you bring the AppSense Data Now technology into your organization, and you bring the appliance, the virtual appliance, you put it into your data center, you need to make zero changes to your back-end store. The DataNow technology uses whichever home drive, wherever the file locations, wherever the folder locations are for the users today, is exactly the same when DataNow is in the environment as well. So we're not going to bring our technology in, and we're not going to say to you, we want you to create a private store and a file share somewhere, or we want to bring you up a new filer, and this is going to be your specific data folder, or this is going to be your new data storage. Likewise, we're also not going to provide you any migration tools that make it easy for you to move where you are now into where we want you to be, because you're not going to do it. I mean, you think about all the spreadsheets that you have, for example, and all of the macros that are in these spreadsheets that point to /finance docs, etc. You move that into a new share, that's not working anymore. And there's nothing worse than the wrath of the bean counters on the phone at month end. You don't want to be moving that data. So when we talk about enabling access to your home drive from any device in any location, we actually mean actually providing that home drive data out. So I'm going to switch over. How do I switch over here, Mike? Which screen are we on? Can you help? Awesome. Certainly. Let's go to the PC first. Let's go to the Windows device.
PC now.
Okay, good. So here I have a Windows device. Now, if this was in the office, so if I was actually on my corporate network right now, I'd actually have a mapped drive. So I'd actually go to Start, Computer, and I'd have a map drive here, and this may be my home drive, etc. Obviously, I can't demo this because we're not actually in the corporate network. When I'm on my laptop, for example, or in this case, this is Mike's laptop we're demoing on, I actually might like to keep my documents on my desktop. So I've got a DataNow folder that I just use here. Let me go ahead and open up this folder. And what you're seeing here is you're seeing the folders and files that are part of my home drive. What you see here is exactly the same as my H drive. And before you guys came in, from my phone, I snapped a little picture of me and Brian down there. And my phone, my DataNow client on my phone is automatically set to sync this data with my corporate home drive as well. So for example, when I took that photograph, I can go ahead and open it, and you can actually see it bringing this file down. It's actually just brought that down from my home drive, and there you can see we look pretty ugly, right? But ultimately, what I'm saying here is I took a photo of me and Brian, and I didn't actually take it on the side, but there you go. I took a photograph, it synced it from my phone to my corporate home drive, and then from my corporate home drive, it's brought it down to my Windows device here. So we're not going to make any changes on this one for a second. Now, when I'm at home, I like to use a Mac. This is my home machine. I sit at home. I use the Mac for all of my my personal stuff. But I also like to have access to my corporate data as well. Can we switch over to the Mac, for example? All right. Now, on the Mac, though, I store my files in a different location. But I can just use a quick link here. Well, the first thing you'll see is all of the files that were on my PC are also available here. I'm going to go ahead and create a new folder here for a second. Data now is cool technology. And what I'm also going to do is I'm going to go ahead and take these pictures here. Let's take a selection of them. I'm going to copy them. I'm going to go ahead and put them into my folder there as well. So what's happening now, you see the little toolbar up here, the status box that we've got just to highlight and illustrate what's happening. Basically, these files are now being sent to my corporate home drive that sits in Manchester at the moment. But once those files are also synchronized with my corporate home drive, they're going to be available on any other device as well, including my phone, iPad, but also my Windows PC. So if we actually switch back now to the PC, Michael, same folder, you'll actually see the folder that I created there. And if we actually scroll down, we can actually also see the pictures that I synchronized as well. But let's say you're on a device as well. You're in a web cafe that doesn't necessarily have the DataNow technology installed. Can we just jump back to the Mac again one more time? We also do provide a web console, which will also give you access to this as well. So if you bring up the web console here, and let's just go ahead to the site, and we're going to go ahead and log in there. And all of the files and folders, etc., that you also see from my desktops are also available in the web client there as well. So again, a machine, an operating system that doesn't necessarily have the DataNow technology installed, you can also access it from the web client as well. This, along with native clients for the iPhone, for the iPad, the Windows Phone, the Android devices, and the various other emerging devices that are going to come out as well. Very, very important native access on these devices. And just one final thing, because, again, it's hard to demonstrate this unless you're in a corporate network, but if there's one key point I want you to take away about the DataNow technology, it would be workflow. Workflow was a fundamental a point that we made when creating this technology. And workflow is really, really important. And what I mean by workflow is, when I'm using DataNow on my Mac, my files, my folders, are in the location that I expect them to be as a Mac user, which for my case would be documents, and I would have a folder in there called corporate. On a Windows device, my DataNow files are in the same location that they would be on a Windows device, which is probably going to be C, documents and settings, John W, documents, etc. But then when I'm in work, my documents are all in my mapped H drive. There's no DataNow component on my work PC. I use a standard networked map drive pointing to my existing home drive, the same way I've done for the last 10 years. And that doesn't change. Again, we don't take the data, we don't put it anywhere else, we preserve that workflow. So that's what we're going to do on here for now. Again, we are about, if you want some more in-depth demonstrations, if you want a one-on-one, if you want to go through the architecture, we're more than happy to do that. We just wanted to give you a look and a feel and an overview of the technology. Michael?
Thanks, John. So essentially, we're ready to take... Oh, yeah, I probably should switch. So hopefully you kind of get an understanding of certainly where we are in terms of user virtualization. It's certainly more than profile management. We think there's a broader story here in terms of rights, performance, the overall user experience that a user expects to get from user virtualization, inclusive of their data on any device. And so with that, I guess John and I, Brian, we're happy to take any questions you might have. Any sort of clarifications you might require for DataNow or any of our technologies. So we'll open it up to Q&A. But our email addresses are there. If you'd like to ask any questions, feel free to send us some personal mail and we'll get back to you as soon as we possibly can. Q&A. No questions? Yeah, so a lot of these demos were in, his question is, can you do all this stuff on PCs as well, or is it just, on virtual machines? You can absolutely do this stuff on just regular PCs. Obviously, for purposes of demonstrations, it's easier to use VMs. But, being able to go from a physical PC with agents on here, being able to then move into a virtual environment and back again,
Beautiful story. It gives you portability across really any platform you want to enable for users. I think we all come to a realization that VDI is not the panacea to desktop management. Certainly, that's not really what it's about. But you can now use a mix of physical and virtual in your environment, and AppSense can help bridge that divide as you go move, say, from Windows XP into 7, and then further on as you go from 7 to 7, 7 to 8, physical, virtual, including natively all virtual applications. So you definitely get that portability on physical as well. So we actually license per user. His question was, how do you license this? We actually license per user, and we have we obviously work with the customer to obviously, based on your size, we work out a price for you that works for you, really. So, even though we have a retail price, the fundamentals are, we all negotiate business, right? Any other questions? All right, well, with that, we're done. Thank you so much for coming to our session. Any other questions, feel free to send me personal mail. I'm on Twitter also with a Twitter handle of @mkleef, M-K-L-E-E-F. Feel free to send me any sort of questions over Twitter as well, as much as you like. All right, thank you very much.